A lot to sort through today. Okay, the House, we are not in the House. Welcome to the Senate.
How long has it been?
Sometimes you just get a little homesick for your family. The Senate Committee on Human Services and Early Childhood will come to order. We are accommodating a lot of different needs today, so we are going to go out of order, and we are not going to be working Senate Bill 213 today. The paperwork isn't ready to go on that, so we're just going to hold that over until the next time we come together in this meeting. The order we're going to go in is Senate Bill 444. We will temporarily open so that Senator Steiner Hayward can speak, and then we're going to go down into the work sessions to Senate Bill 307, which we're not moving today, but we're going to hear some more testimony. I'm very briefly, don't panic, going to open Senate Bill 226, public hearing. We aren't taking testimony on this bill today. This bill is going to be gut and stuffed to deal with issues related to the stabilization and crisis units operated by the Department of Human Services, and all of the parties that are involved in that are engaged in a discussion, and there's a work session posted for this bill. That's when we'll first see those amendments and start to talk about them. We will not move it that day that we have that work session, but we wanted to just make it clear on the record what the vehicle was for those SACU amendments, and that is going to be Senate Bill 226. So I'm now closing the public hearing on Senate Bill 226 and opening up a public hearing on Senate Bill 444. And inviting Senator Steiner Hayward.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Elizabeth Steiner Hayward, State Senator from Senate District 17. In 2013, the Senate and this legislature passed Senate Bill 450, which was a bill to develop the task force on streamlining the delivery of human services, with the goal of looking at ways that we could reduce barriers to efficient delivery of human services and get people back to true self-sufficiency as quickly as possible. This committee, this task force, met very successfully over the course of about 15 months and identified several areas where we could make a difference pretty quickly, one of which was around housing. And everybody recognizes that housing in Oregon, especially low and moderate income housing, is in terribly short supply. We also know that once somebody loses their regular housing, it becomes incredibly difficult to rehouse them because it's hard to find affordable housing, and you have to have not only first month's rent, but last month's rent and security deposit. Whereas, if we can keep somebody in their home and provide emergency assistance, temporary emergency assistance, when people get back to full employment so that they can afford to pay their rent or their mortgage, and avoid the trauma that comes to children and to families by being displaced out of their housing, that it is much more humane, it's much more effective in terms of keeping kids in their schools, preventing adverse childhood experiences that have long-term adverse effects on children, and it's a heck of a lot cheaper, so we can help more people for less money. So Senate Bill 444 basically just directs the Department of Housing and Community Services to focus more efforts on housing stabilization rather than rehousing, and to work with its community partners to prioritize housing stabilization, to reach out more through 211, through Community Action and other organizations to identify families that are at risk of becoming homeless and help prevent that so that we can help people stay stable and go from there. I will allow the advocates to come and talk, and Ms. Van Vliet, the director of the department, when you reopen this hearing. And I'm very grateful for your understanding in allowing me to testify early. I just wanted to lay the groundwork for this bill and urge the committee to support this. It's a fairly straightforward bill. It's got the full support from the department and from housing advocates, and it's just basically making sure that our policy aligns with best practices in keeping people housed in appropriate housing.
Okay. Thank you very much. Are there any questions for Senator Steiner Hayward before we let her move on to her next commitment? Seeing none.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair.
I really appreciate it. We'll see you soon. And so we're going to temporarily close the public hearing on Senate Bill 444. We will come back in a few minutes and open up the work session on Senate Bill 307. And I would invite Senator Johnson and Mrs. Hatfield and Representative Gilliam. Are you here for something else?
Here to listen.
I blame you for thinking I was in the House.
He's probably ducking a committee. whole new role.
Welcome.
Thank you.
It's an honor to have you here with us today, Mrs. Hatfield.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for your accommodation in hearing this bill and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Betsy Johnson. I represent Senate District 16. The genesis of this bill happened almost 2 years ago when I was discharged to the Mirabella facility in Portland following a very serious traffic accident. I had finished my course of time at OHSU and was sent to the Mirabella to their medical recovery and physical therapy section. My experience there was the first time that I have been totally dependent on others to be able to accomplish the acts of daily living. The good news for me is that I had two good friends living at Mirabella in another section of the building, and through the course of conversations with Mrs. Hatfield and one of her colleagues and friends, I had the opportunity to visit with them about their experience and their expectations of standard of care. Based on their concerns and my own experience, we drafted this bill. The bill does exactly what it says it does. It requires a facility to honor requests for same-sex caregivers for personal care and to try to be as reasonably accommodating as it can be for schedule concerns and issues of that type, especially when the schedule concern dictates whether or not the caregiver can be of the same gender. Addressing a concern that Senator Montes Anderson expressed to me just before the committee started, it leaves an out for the facility to demonstrate they would have to do it in writing, it couldn't just be passing, that if the request significantly created difficulty or was costly to accommodate, that the facility could then express that, but they would have to do it in writing. I think Mrs. Hatfield, given her druthers, would like to have that language stay in the bill, but it does exactly what it says. And I think the thing that was driven home most clearly to me during my time there when I was so dependent on other people is that in the case of Mrs. Hatfield and her many of her colleagues at Mirabella, and in my case, we were our own good advocates. But I hope that you view this bill through the prism of someone who has no advocacy, has nobody to call, has nobody in the building making their cases and wishes known for them. I consider this bill a bill for the voiceless. And what we are really interested in doing is making sure that there's an accommodation on a standard of care. Now, there are an amendment, the Dash 3 amendments, that accommodate some concerns raised by Providence in one of their very unique specialty facilities. The amendments, to the best of my knowledge, have been talked about widely out in the hallways, and everybody has generally agreed on the Dash 3 amendments. But we bring this bill to you for your consideration as really a way to give voice to people who would have no advocacy but for this bill in this narrow range of issues, and that's the accommodation of same-gender caregivers for acts of daily living and personal hygiene.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I think, I don't know if Mrs. Hatfield wants to add anything on her own or be responsive to questions that you all might raise. I would
answer questions.
Okay.
First.
Cool. So either Mrs. Hatfield or I would be available to answer questions.
And before we do the questions, I think, Mrs. Hatfield, we need you to just say who you are for the record.
I'm Antoinette Hatfield. I'm the widow of Mark Hatfield.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions for Senator Johnson or Mrs. Hatfield? Senator Montes Anderson.
Thank you. This is for Mrs. Hatfield. I would like you to relay or just put on the record the problems that you have seen or had in a care facility like this where the gender wasn't appropriate.
Well, I'm old enough to not want a man to giving me a shower.
Okay.
And so I asked for them to have a woman. And they said, well, everybody doesn't have a shower every day. And I said, well, don't you wish they did? And, you know, they were going to be sassy. I could be sassy. But the problem has gone on, and what's happened is that I had to either have a 6:30 a.m. shower, which precluded my going to the pool for the exercise I needed for a knee replacement, or I would have to have either a 7:30 shower, But now, this month, I noticed, and they must have heard that I was coming down, because I have all 8 o'clock showers except for 4 Monday morning showers at 6:30. So that's a great improvement. I do think that sometimes they're short on staff, and I discussed this with the director of the floor before I left, and I said, is there anything you'd like for me to relay for you? I said, I did not write this bill. I'm just going down to answer questions. But if I can be helpful to you, I would be. Well, no, because the peak periods vary, and so you can't. You'd have to figure out some way to have it covered. Well, the best way to have it covered is to have a second person on for the whole shift, because then in the case of an emergency, if there's an emergency on the floor and there's only one CNA to take care of 16 rooms, the math doesn't figure. So that's where we are now. We still have 16 rooms. Two of them are unoccupied at the time. Two of the people have hired their own outside people to take care of their needs because they couldn't get the service that they needed at the time they needed it in the morning. And so that still leaves, 12 rooms, 12 slots. And so if you only have one person, one CNA, there's a med person, but they seldom lead their med cart because they have to be very careful about the way they count the bills and deliver them at a certain time. So that's all I have to say, is that something needs to be done about the staffing, I would think.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Because you see, let me tell you one thing. On the skilled nursing, I think you've prescribed how many per how many people. And I think Betsy can tell you that even that isn't enough. But on the assisted living, it's as needed. And the as needed is who's determining it, the executive or the person who's being taken care of. So there's a difference of opinion there.
I might just add, this is Betsy Johnson again, I might just add that in advance of doing this bill, I contacted folks at the corporate headquarters of the Mirabella to largely no avail. We arranged a meeting with the manager at Mirabella and were largely dismissed. And so I at least want the committee to know we tried to work this through at a variety of different levels. Now, serendipitously, I ran into a former corporate board member who was in the building last week working on an early childhood bill. And she's from Southern Oregon, she and I had the opportunity to visit about the bill. She thought that the issue had been addressed, and I had to sadly report to her that the dismissive attitude of the manager had not resolved any problem, and we were going to go ahead with the bill, and Mrs. Hatfield was going to come down and testify. So I just want the committee to know this was not ambushed by bill. We have tried to work this out and just can't seem to get their attention. And so at this point, we have lifted the issue up to the Legislative Assembly, and it comes to you in the form of Senate Bill 307. Now, Senator Manas Anderson has raised some concerns that she would like to discuss with me. I am perfectly open to that conversation. Again, and perhaps this is reflective of the fact that I'm getting to be of a certain age, and I can hear my mother up in heaven at age 93 telling me that there's no way in hell she would have had a male attendant help her with a shower. And Mrs. Hatfield, my mother, were dear friends. So there is a certain personal element to this to try to accommodate people at a certain age that need a certain level of comfort for the assistance in just the acts of daily living. And I'm sure it's the same with gentlemen, although I can't relate to that perspective as well as I can to the ladies.
Well, to add to that, I think that they've always given me a woman, but it's the scheduling.
Can you put the microphone back in front of us? Thank you.
They've always given me a woman because I demanded one, but it was the hours that they gave it to me for were not really terribly convenient for anybody. That it was kind of, there's a term, but I can't remember it because my mind is failing once in a while.
But it's constructive denial to put it at times that are outrageously inconvenient. So I think we have largely made our case for your consideration. I will get with Senator Manas Anderson And again, the amendments were Providence amendments for a unique facility that they have. And those have all, I think, been generally agreed to.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Any other questions for this panel? Senator Denbrough.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. I do have a question, and welcome. It's a real honor to have you here, Mrs. Hatfield. One of the concerns that I had when we first heard the bill was that not all residents are going to be as, feel as open to express their opinion as perhaps you are and Senator Johnson's mother would have been. And I'm wondering if there aren't a lot of residents there who wouldn't know to assert their rights even if this bill were to pass, and if, part of the protocol shouldn't be letting the residents know that they have this ability to decide the gender of their caregiver.
May I speak to that?
Yes, please do.
Absolutely. First of all, let me use this forum to give kudos to the Oregon Ombudsman's Office, because they are the people that are in facilities giving voice to people that are voiceless. And you have raised an absolutely imperative point. Most people are in facilities, sometimes are frightened, they're sick, they are voiceless, they don't know how to assert their requests in a forceful way. I think that the facility would tell you that Mrs. Hatfield and I were fairly anomalous in that both of us had robust Rolodexes and weren't shy about using them. That's why I think this bill is so important. This bill gives voice to the voiceless. And had Mrs. Hatfield not had the wide network of support, the same with me, to make our case known, I'm not sure that it would have been. Actually, I had complained so bitterly about some of the issues when I was there that DHS was dispatched. And that's a whole nother story for a whole nother time, because they came in a way that, for all intents and purposes, put a neon light on my door that said, think that called. And I think that there was a genuine fear of retaliation at some points in time. So trying to work out sensitive, appropriate caregiving in an environment that doesn't subject the residents to retaliation and works in a more harmonious way with DHS, particularly the licensing section, to make sure that there is a venue to address these kinds of grievances. One of the things that we discovered, Mrs. Hatfield and Mrs. Boyle and I, when we were working on this, was the fact that complaints would arrive at DHS and the DHS licensing people, and I want to be fair, I think there's a real effort to correct this at this point, but the licensing people would call up the facility and say, so-and-so has reported this bad behavior going on. Tell us this isn't the case, right? I mean, you don't call the alleged perpetrators to say, how's it going? And I think that we have made that case very clear at DHS, and I would see improvements in licensing just by lifting the issue up into the public domain. But yeah, this is a bill for the voiceless.
Right.
Also, you have to understand that Mirabella is a premium facility. So if we have some problems, imagine what they have in less premium facilities. I think that's even more important to look into.
Right. I will, if I could just follow up. I will say that the facility where my mother was while she was still with us, it was pretty routine. If a man was going to do something intimate, washing or taking her to the bathroom, he would always ask her if it was okay that he did it, or should he find a woman to do it. And it was kind of part of their routine. And I think my mother. My mother was the sort of person who would have been fine either way, but being asked, I think, meant a lot to her. So, again, I don't know that we need to require this in the law, but I think it really is a best practice.
If I may respond, I think that that has been the consensus in talking to others about this bill, because we didn't want to sweep a net that was too fine that would cause facilities to undo economic hardship. But I think best practices is the word that has come up over and over and over again, that best practices accommodates a gender preference for personal care. And so I think you're spot on in your observation.
anything further? Seeing nothing, thank you very much. And I will be working with you, Senator Johnson, to get the amendments, and it'll come back.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And thanks for making the time to come see us today, Mrs. Hatfield. With that, I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 307. And thank you. Let's see. We're going to do the work sessions now because we're going to lose Senator Cruz in the near future. So I'm going to open up a work session on Senate Bill 296. Cheyenne. I'm just going in order.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 296 was previously heard on March 5th. I believe the fiscal impact request, the fiscal impact is on the dais because it was received today. There is a fiscal statement and no revenue on the Dash 3 amendment. The Dash 3 amendment aligns some dates, Department of Revenue dates, with the annual reconnection to the IRS code and removes the blank in Section 30 for the appropriations amount. Department of Revenue is here if anybody has any questions. The measure transfers administration of funding and structure for the Elderly Rental Assistance Program from the Department of Revenue to Oregon Housing and Community Services. I think I mentioned it was previously heard on the 5th. Prescribes operative dates and takes effect the 91st day after signing die.
And just because I know that the tagline on this bill causes some heartburn for people, it's repeals Elderly Assistance Program. I wondered if Margaret Van Vliet, could you come up and reconfirm for us that we are not ending assistance to the elderly? Since it's been a while since we heard the bill.
Thank you. Chair Gelster and members of the committee, Margaret Van Vliet, Housing and Community Services Department Director. That's right. We've been talking for some years about maybe about the way in which we could help administer this program that's currently at the Department of Revenue, which is intended to help low-income seniors with their housing expenses. They do not feel like they are the right place to have good policy in place to ensure that the program is administered appropriately for the target population. So what we've devised is a way for the funds to effectively be transferred to us. We will incorporate the work into our existing rental assistance programs that are administered through community action agencies and work really hard to outreach to seniors who are used to getting this resource and make sure they know what else they can tap into in the way of supports. So it's we think of it as a transfer, not a repeal. So
thank you very much. Any questions while we have her up here?
Yes, and I'm just pulling the bill up here. It was the dates, and it's probably very straightforward, but when I was first perusing it earlier today, the timing is it's,
I'm gonna, if it's all right with you, we'll have the Department of Revenue.
Of course.
Dash three.
Chair Gelser and Senator Mona Sanderson, for the record, Deanna Mack, Department of Revenue. And I'll go over the dates for you, and I believe it's in probably the last page of the introduced bill. Let me get to it just real quick. Section 29 deals with the operative dates, and what those statutes do there in Section 29, Paragraph 1, that repeals the existing provisions for the Elderly Rental Assistance Program as the Department of Revenue administers it. As of January 1, 2016. So the taxpayers right now, as they're eligible, they're filing right now claims for tax year or calendar year 2014. They have to file their claims by July 1 of 2015. The expenses they incur in 2015 through December 31st, 2015 get to be claimed in July of 2016. So the statutory authorization for the expenses that are incurred right now in 2015 will be repealed as of January 1, 2016. Now in Section 3 of the bill, and that's where the Dash 3 amends the date, Paragraph 3 of Section 29, the date is changed to July 1 of 2017 for the operative Section 7 and 8, which is the transfer of the fund over to housing. So they actually then start their work July 1 of 2017. So the Department of Revenue will maintain for this biennium the Elderly Rental Assistance Program. They're filing this year, they're filing claims right now for the expenses they incurred in 2014. 2014 will issue a check in November of 2015 for their 2014 expenses. And then in 2016, the provision in paragraph 2 of that section, 310.657, are the procedural provisions for us to for the claimant to file a claim and for us to issue a refund. So that's why that section is repealed December 31st of 2016. Because it's after we issue our last payment.
See, that's why I didn't understand
it. No, it's very confusing. And so we've had to explain that to a lot of people. But the main provision goes away after calendar year 2015. We still have the ability to issue a payment in 2016. And then the funding beginning the next biennium will go over to housing July 1, 2017. So part of the amendment today was to remove Section 30, which is the appropriation language, which is unnecessary because Department of Revenue is asking for the current appropriation for the elderly rental assistance in our budget bill, House Bill 5035. So it's redundant in this bill. So that's why that's being removed.
My question was answered.
Great. Thank you very much. Any further questions? Seeing none. Senator Olson.
Chair Gilster, I move to adopt the Dash 3 amendments to Senate Bill 296, dated 3/31/2015.
Senator Olson moves to adopt the Dash 1 amendments. Too many pieces of paper. The Dash 3 amendments to Senate Bill 296, dated 3/31/2015. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection to the amendments? Seeing none, they're adopted.
Chair Gelser, I move Senate Bill 296 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Olson moves Senate Bill 296 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection? Seeing none, the bill passes and will go to the floor. Senator Cruz, would you please carry this bill?
Okay.
Great. And with that, I'm going to close the working session on Senate Bill 296. I'm now going to open a work session on Senate Bill 430.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 430 was previously heard on February 26th. It has no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact. This is the one that makes explicit state board's authority to deny licensure due to conviction for sex crimes. Applies to the Board of Psychologists, Examiners, Licensed Social Workers, and Licensed Professional Counselors.
Thank you. Vice Chair Olson.
Chair Gilster, I move Senate Bill 430 to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Olson moves Senate Bill 430 to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Seeing none, the motion passes and the bill will go to the floor, and I'll carry this one. I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 296 or on 430 and open a work session on Senate Bill 475.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 475 was previously heard on February 26th. It expands the juvenile detention education program provision of educational services to include juveniles in youth care centers within detention facilities. It basically shifts those what were two programs into one for streamlining purposes. A revenue statement issued and a fiscal statement issued, and there is no subsequent referral.
Great. Vice Chair Olson.
Chair Gilster, I move Senate Bill 475 to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Olson moves Senate Bill 475 to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, the motion passes. And Senator Olson, will you carry the bill?
Yes, I will.
Thank you. With that, I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 475. Now we're on to a yellow piece of paper.
Sure.
Ready?
I'm with it.
Okay, opening a work session on Senate Bill 490.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 490, previously heard on March 5th, requires the Department of Human Services seek approval from, I won't summarize what the measure does because it is replaced by the contents of the Dash 1 amendment, which creates a task force. If you all remember, Senator Edwards came in when the amendment was pending, indicated it would be stuffed with the creation of a task force on healthy food for low-income families, staffed by the Department of Human Services, specifies the composition and object of that task force, requires a report to the legislature by September 15th, and sunsets on September 31st. There is no revenue impact on the Dash 1 and a minimal fiscal on the Dash 1.
Vice Chair Olson.
Chair Gilster, I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 490, dated 3/13/2015.
Vice Chair Olson moves to adopt the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 490, dated 3/13/2015. Is there any discussion?
Yes. Was there any opposition to the Dash 1s? I mean, have we had a public hearing on
the dash ones? I mean, did people speak to it?
When we had the public hearing, the content of the dash ones were described.
Okay, I just didn't have that down. Thank you.
Any further discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, the amendments are adopted. Vice Chair Olson.
Chair Gilster, I move Senate Bill 490 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Olson moves Senate Bill 490 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection?
Senator Edwards. He'll carry.
Well, he doesn't get to vote right now, though, but he'll carry. Are you reading over my shoulder?
I am.
I thought you were very telepathic. All right. Did anybody object to that?
Not if Edwards is carrying it.
All right. Seeing none, the motion passes, and Senator Edwards will be the carrier of the bill.
Questions on the floor, right?
I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 490, open up a work session on Senate Bill 500.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 500 is the measure which appropriates general fund dollars to construct a Boys and Girls Club in the Rockwood area of Gresham, declares emergency as effective July 1st, 2015. There's no revenue impact and an indeterminate fiscal issued. It has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Vice Chair Olson.
Chair Gilster, I move Senate Bill 500 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Vice Chair Olson moves Senate Bill 500 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there discussion? I have discussion. So I'm supporting this. Obviously, we scheduled it. I struggled with it a little bit just because of the precedent. I know I serve on the board of a Boys and Girls Club, so perhaps I should declare a conflict of interest right now as well.
No, Madam Chair, that is for the House
side. That is for the House side.
But you're
so nice to be in the
caution.
Senate. Abundance of caution. So I know that you know, my community has asked why I did not put in a bill for them and the teen center that they're working to build. I think there was a good hearing, but I just wanted to acknowledge that I know that many people have very, very worthy and important projects. I was really impressed by the testimony and the severe need in this area, particularly not having any youth activities in that area is of great concern and I believe of statewide significance. But any further discussion, Senator Cruz?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I'm going to oppose this bill for the very simple reason, and I've been involved with Boys and Girls Clubs for a long time, that we have been advocating for funding for programs for all the Boys and Girls Clubs in Oregon, and for us to be singling out just one, I think, is totally inappropriate.
Thank you, Chair Cruz. And to clarify, this isn't for their operating expenses, it's for the
I understand that.
Okay. Any further discussion? Seeing none, would you please call the roll, Maria?
Senator Denver?
Aye.
Senator Cruz?
No.
Senator Morris Anderson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Aye. That's the end. The motion passes, and so Senate Bill 500 will go on to the Ways and Means Committee and doesn't need a carrier, right? So I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 500, open up a work session on Senate Bill 501.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 501, previously heard on March 10th, appropriates general fund dollars to the Oregon Youth Authority for the East Metro Gang Enforcement Team, declares an emergency effective July 1, 2015. No revenue impact, a fiscal impact issued, and it has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Thank you. Vice Chair Olson.
Chair Gilster, I move Senate Bill 501 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Vice Chair Olson moves Senate Bill 501 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there discussion?
I would like to say something, a comment. I support this bill. I support the need, and I appreciate Senator Mona Sanderson providing for her community, but I think it's a shame that we have to do this.
Thank you. Any further discussion? I would just with this pair of bills, would really thank Senator Mona Sanderson for really bringing these really important issues to our attention. I do think that it's something that our entire state needs to be focused on. It impacts every single one of us. Thank you. So is there no further discussion? Is there any objection to the measure going to the Ways and Means Committee? Seeing none, so ordered. And I will close the work session on Senate Bill 501. And so to the kind Senate Bill 444 people, do you mind hanging out for just a couple more minutes so we can grab the people that are on the phone? Are you good? Thank you very much. So I'm going to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 465.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 465 replaces county with community health, mental health program, and community mental health program director throughout the statutory scheme governing the process to initiate commitment of persons with mental illness to align responsibility for payment of associated costs. There is an amendment pending that's being worked out and declares emergency effective on passage, no subsequent referral.
Okay.
Thanks. So why don't we start with Commissioner Morgan and Paul Meyer. And Senator Cruz, I think you're also a chief sponsor of this bill. Did you wish to say anything about it?
What bill are we doing?
465.
We're here.
Welcome.
Unity Mental Health.
Thank you. Am I talking to Chair Gelser?
Yes, it's nice to hear your voice again.
It's great to hear your voice, Senator Gelser. It's good to talk to you. For the record, my name is Susan Morgan. I'm a Douglas County Commissioner. I'm here today to testify in favor of Senate Bill 465, which was introduced by Senators Prosansky and Cruz at my request. And this is as a result of the CCO legislation that's been enacted in the state of Oregon right now. And the county is not providing mental health services. The mental health services have been passed over to a nonprofit that is underneath the umbrella of the CCO right now. So funding for mental health services goes to the CCO, not to the county. And the implementation of the program is with the nonprofit and not with the county. So we're requesting in this legislation that statute be changed to remove responsibility from the county in the situation that we're in. You have before you the original bill language of Senate Bill 465. Since that language came out, we have worked with both AOC and Multnomah County on some issues that they have brought forward. That resulted in the Dash 1 amendments being drafted. And as the Draft 1 amendments emerged, we found a couple of changes that we wanted to make, and we've requested Draft 2 amendments, which I believe all counties are now in agreement with, all entities, AOC, Multnomah County, and Douglas County. And with your kind consent, Madam Chair, I would like to have Paul Meyer, who's our Douglas County Counsel, describe the county's requested changes to you and also give you a recap of the differences between the Dash 1 and Dash 2 amendments.
That would be great. Thank you very much.
I will just pass this over then to Paul Meyer.
Good afternoon, Senators. My name is Paul Meyer, and I'm County Counsel for Douglas County, and I've had the privilege to work with Commissioner Morgan for several years. I'm the author of the first draft of what became the original Senate Bill 465. ORS Chapter 426, the Civil Commitment Statute, as it currently stands, is strewn with provisions that say that when the county runs out of state money given to the county for paying for civil commitment cases, that the county is to pay the bill thereafter. Where the county is the community mental health program, these provisions seem to make sense because they prompt the county to manage its mental health crisis program carefully. This includes when we ran mental health, going to the local hospital, because hospitalization is a huge expense in civil commitment cases, and negotiating with the hospital for better medical service rates than they typically would bill for without a negotiated agreement. However, where the county is not the community mental health program any longer, and it's being run by a local nonprofit corporation, as is now the case in Douglas County, the nonprofit has no motivation under the current statutes to manage its crisis program expenses, because they know that if they run out of money, the hospital will send the bill to the county and we will have to pay it under the law that currently stands. So Senate Bill 465 is our attempt to simply say to community mental health programs that are not county run that the county is no longer going to have to pay the bill if they burn through their state funding. We're okay with the Dash 1 amendments except for two little things that we believe will appear in a Dash 2. Dash 1 deletes a couple of proposed changes.
And just this is Sarah Gelser. Just to clarify, we don't actually have Dash 1 amendments. They haven't been
delivered
yet. So I believe the amendments you're speaking to, when they are delivered, will still be the Dash 1s, because the draft of those are going to be redrafted. So there will be no Dash 2s.
Okay.
So we have nothing to be looking at. We have nothing in front of us.
Because they haven't been delivered.
Thank you for the clarification.
You're welcome.
As Oregon indicated, there are somewhere Dash 1 amendments. And those were brought forward by some of the other participants. And they make some minor changes to the original bill. And we are okay with what you will eventually see as Dash 1, except for two little things. Dash 1, as it will be presented to you in its current form, proposes changes, deletes proposed changes to ORS 426-250 and ORS 426-297. Those two ORS sections, as they currently stand, first, 426-250, subsection 5 concerns payment of costs related to the commitment of an individual in Indian country and of an extremely dangerous person. Those terms, an individual in Indian country and extremely dangerous persons, are terms of art in the statute, and they happen to describe a couple of particular kind of civil commitment situations that do not happen very often. But when they do, Section 5 of the current statute says that the cost shall be paid by the county of which the person is a resident. The original
Can I ask quickly, since, again, we don't have papers in front of us, those are pretty troubling terms. Are they going to go away in the new statute?
An individual in Indian country and an extremely dangerous person? No. There are provisions written into the current version of ORS Chapter 426 that dovetail with the standard 426 civil commitment process when the commitment involves folks that fit those two particular categories. With the Indian law situation, of course, there's lots of coordination with tribal governments, jurisdiction. And I've actually never actually seen a commitment of an extremely dangerous person. But 426-250, as it currently stands in the statute, says that in those two, as I said, unusual commitment scenarios, that the cost shall be paid by the county of which the person is a resident. So what we proposed in the original SB 465 was the same kind of change that runs throughout. It's the common theme of 465 as originally proposed, which would amend that payment language to say that the costs are to be paid by the community mental health program in the county of which the person is a resident. For some reason, the Dash 1 amendment in its current form deletes that provision from the Senate bill, which would leave the original ORS language unchanged. We don't think that's a good thing. It's the same theme with a proposed change to another provision in ORS Chapter 426. This is Section 297, and it concerns payment of costs related to what's referred to as a competency hearing. The law is pretty clear that just because you've been found to be dangerous to self or others or unable to provide and consequently are civilly committed to the jurisdiction of the state to care for you, that does not mean under the law that you're not competent. In some situations, however, those folks really aren't competent. Section 426-297, as it currently stands in the statute, is an add-on provision that has to do with declaring folks not competent under some, I think, fairly unusual situations. And as I said, I've been here 25 years and I've actually never seen a competency hearing, but the statute, the way it currently stands, says in that kind of situation, the county is to pay the cost for those competency hearings. And again, like the other change that The dash one would take out of the Senate bill. The dash one would also take out parallel changes that we recommended that are in the Senate bill to this 426-297 to simply say that the costs of competency hearings need to be paid by the community mental health program. So in sum, the dash one amendment that you, I guess, we'll see someday, deletes those two proposed changes to the statute that are currently in the original Senate Bill 465. We don't believe the county ought to be left to pay the bills in those situations, and so request that the committee entertain an amended dash one that would put back the amendments to 426-250 and 426-297 into the Senate Bill 465. So thank you. I'm, of course, happy to entertain any questions.
Any questions? I don't see any. We may, when the bill comes back up and we get the amendments, I think we should be prepared to have a longer discussion. It's a little difficult to follow without having the paper in front of us to look at.
Yes, and I apologize. As Commissioner Morgan said, we assumed that you would have had the dash ones with you today.
No,
and also, this is Susan Morgan again, and I do apologize for the confusion on the bill. And I think that once the amendments, the final set of amendments come out, the whole thing will fit together much better.
Thank you. And I just for the record, from talking with Cheyenne, it sounds like the amendments will actually be the dash ones, that you received a draft
not for distribution correct.
Of the dash ones,
yeah.
And those corrections will be made, so they will actually come out as a dash one. So just so that the record is clear, what's been described is what will be the dash two will actually be the dash one.
Thank you very much for that clarification.
This is Paul Meyer. I might also say yesterday I took the dash ones and took the liberty of changing them so that there is floating around sort of a marked up copy of dash one.
So for the purposes of the committee, for the purposes of the committee, we're just going to pretend like there is no amendment yet until we see one.
Okay.
And I think it will make a lot more sense and allow us to consider it better when we have something in front of us and we know what it's called. Is that okay?
That works. Fire fine. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any further questions for this panel? Seeing none, thank you both. Do you want to stay on the phone to hear the rest of this section of the hearing?
Would much appreciate that opportunity.
So I have Patty O and Cheryl Ramirez. And if you prefer to wait to speak to the amendments when we get them, we will give you a chance to do so when that happens. I note that you're wanting to offer testimony on the dash one amendment. We don't have the dash one amendment, and I'd ask that the comments be directed primarily towards the bill or the issue in general.
Yes,
just because, as stated, we don't have an amendment.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Patricia O'Sullivan. I represent the Oregon Association of Hospitals and Health Systems. I did not come here today intending to testify. You know, when you read a bill for the first time or the 10th time, sometimes you assume certain things for the reasons that it was dropped, and I assumed the wrong way. So after listening to the testimony, I needed to come up here. I understand what they're saying about when CCOs have come into effect and some have now contracted back to the counties, some have now contracted to nonprofits, and some are handling mental health issues on their own through a provider system. So I think that this change that they're asking for is a little bit premature. The statutes, there was a group of us that went through all of the commitment statutes in the interim because we represent hospitals and it's our acute care units that these folks are normally in when they're on hold and get committed to the state. And so we looked at them, and there are all kinds of problems with these statutes. They're very archaic and very old, to the point where your credit card company can commit you. And I don't really think the Visa company or MasterCharge should have a right to commit you, but that's what the statutes say because they're very, very old. But the CCOs, if they contract with the nonprofits, they're simply a contractor. The CCO is responsible for the payment and for the people that are on Medicaid and members of their CCO. There's still indigent care that don't belong to a CCO and don't have commercial insurance that the counties handle. And then you have commercial people that are commercially insured, and you have Medicare. So there's a lot of different kinds of payments. And I believe that their issues tend to focus on the CCO. That's only one kind. And I've gotten statistics from different acute care units, and they're all a little bit different, but typically the patients that go into acute psychiatric units are about 30-30-10, and that's 30 Medicaid, 30 Medicare, 30 commercial, and about 10 what we call self-pay, which is actually no pay. So I just think it's a little early, and there's a lot of other circumstances that we have to consider and not change it. Who is the local mental health provider that they're talking about? Just because you put it in little letters instead of big capital letters, I don't know who they're talking about, because there's different providers for everybody. And the payer is normally the person that you want to wrap the services around them in the community, whether they're commercially insured or CCOs or indigent. And we tend to always focus on indigent and the poor people. And really, we've been working in on some other bills that are only for commercial, because they receive very little out in the community. So there's, you know, there's just a lot more here than what's meeting the eye, and I don't really understand exactly what they're getting at. And Ms. Ramirez kind of showed me that dash one thing that doesn't exist, and that that might help take care of their unusual circumstance. But nonprofits in this case are only contractors for CCOs, who are the ultimate responsible one, because they get the global budget for it. And these nonprofits or counties, if they're contracted with, are only carrying out on a subcontractor basis the duties of the CCO, just as they were carrying out the duties of the county prior to CCOs coming into a play. So I didn't intend to, and I don't really have a specific thing to tell you, except this makes no sense to what's really out there in the real world.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Gelzer, members of the committee. I'm Cheryl Ramirez, the director of the Association of Oregon Community Mental Health Programs, and I'm here as the requester of the amendment. Our association requested this amendment of Commissioner Morgan. I will not go through the dash one amendment that you don't have, but I just wanted to briefly explain why we requested the amendment. So while we want to accommodate both Douglas and Klamath counties' relinquishment of responsibility for their community mental health programs, we also want to ensure that other county CMHP or community mental health program contract relationships remain intact. This bill affects, as Patty alluded to, it affects 20 other counties that have rolled out their CMHP, their community mental health program, into a not-for-profit agency. This is not just in Douglas and Klamath, where the community mental health program is actually a not-for-profit. It's in 20 other counties. But these 20 other counties still retain their local mental health authority responsibilities. So in other words, the contract from the state comes to the county, the Board of Commissioners signs it, and they delegate the responsibilities for those services to the not-for-profit community mental health program. But they are still fiscally responsible and are in a contractual relationship with that community mental health program. There are also 14 other community mental health programs that are within county departments, and there's one community mental health program that is in the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs. So that's one reason we want to make sure the system is looked at here, not just one or two counties. The second reason that we request an amendment was to make the we revise Section 3 and 4 to make the duties of the community mental health program and the responsibilities for payment clear in the commitment statute, Chapter 426, and consistent with the other community mental health statutes in Chapter 430. So these would be the duties relating to emergency psychiatric care, custody, and treatment, subject to the availability of funds provided by the state. And to echo Patty's comments, we're really mostly talking here about care for the indigent, the uninsured, the underinsured, Medicare, again, some commercial private insurance, and veterans, too, that are covered with these funds. So that's all I have. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you very much. Any questions for this panel? I've got one, just to clarify for Patty. So what is your... You said it doesn't reflect what's happening out there in the real world. Are you comfortable with either the bill or the Dash 1 amendments? Are you uncomfortable with all of it? Do you have more questions and you want to come back?
D, all of the above, but okay. Actually, as long as I saw the actual written Dash 1s, I guess I have to save my opinion until I actually see them, because you don't know how they're going to be written. But, I mean, if there's some sort of a carve-out because they have a specific situation, that would be one thing. But I think that the situations are changing daily out there with CCOs. And if you look at the statutes of 430 and 426, if you follow them through, which we did, the ultimate responsibility for the mentally ill in this state is the state. They give the money to the counties. The counties give the money to other people. The state gives the money to CCOs. And throughout that, all of the duties that counties or the state should do, nowhere does it say they should only do them for the poor. It doesn't say that anywhere. So what we're trying to look at, and we have a bill to make conversation, what we're trying to look at is whose ultimate responsibility is it, and where is the money going? Because our acute care units, this is what happens, just what she said. No, they owe it to you. No, they owe it to you. And in many, many cases, we get nothing for taking care of the most seriously psychotic and ill people in the state. But so I would like to hold my opinion until I actually see the amendments. If it's a carve out that makes sense and doesn't hurt other counties, or includes the counties that it should, it might be okay, but I don't know.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. All right, with that, we are going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 465, and we are going to reopen the public hearing on Senate Bill 444 and invite Omar and Ryan. Thank you for being so patient. And Margaret, did you want to come up on this as well? All right, very good.
Should I go first?
Sure.
All right. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Margaret Van Bleet, Director of Housing and Community Services Department. I'll be brief. I am very supportive of the bill. I think it makes sense. I'm appreciative of Senator Steiner Hayward's leadership on questions of housing access and housing stabilization. The bill calls on my department to do things that we know need to be done very much anyway, but we're not truthfully in the habit of doing them. And so it calls on us to be very much more in alignment with Department of Human Services and Oregon Health Authority. It asks us to be more intentional about investing in being able to track our investments and their effectiveness and outcomes over time. And so we think this is a vehicle that helps us do what we intend to do. I would say there is some, we will need to be savvy about which programs really would fit the definition and the intent, but I think working with the partners, we can very much do that. The primary partners are going to be the community action agencies, and I know Ryan will speak on their behalf this afternoon. So nothing to we're happy to support this bill and work hard with the senator and the legislature generally to meet the intent here. So
thank you very much.
Hello, my name is Ryan Fisher. I'm here today on behalf of the Community Action Partnership of Oregon. We are in support of Senate Bill 444. I participated in the work group as a spectator, attended all of the meetings, either in person or remotely, found them to be very good discussions that took some perspectives that have not typically been taken in order to look at how we can deliver these services and integrate different departments. And so very much want to applaud the efforts of Senator Steiner Hayward for bringing this group together and for leading the discussion in the manner that she did. I think that all of the things in here will be of benefit to the discussion about housing, which is incredibly important, especially right now. And I want to speak a moment to the piece in the bill about metrics and just let you know that the Community Action Partnership of Oregon has been partnering with Oregon State University Department of Rural Studies to develop some metrics to look at just this sort of thing. How are we doing? How can we make sure that we are measuring the right things? A lot of times the things that the federal government asks us to measure are really more about how efficient is the delivery, not how effective is the delivery. And the purpose of this work with Oregon State University is to really answer that latter question, and we are working with the department on that project as well. The last thing that I will say is I think that this focus on maintaining stability is an important one. Senator Steiner Hayward, in her testimony, referenced the expense of the first and last month's rent, but that doesn't even take into account the fact that if you have lost your home, it probably was an eviction or a foreclosure, either of which make it harder to find your next rental property because it's on your past record. And so there are many other pieces that go along with when you lose housing that make that result in barriers moving forward. So we are in support, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Omar.
Chair Gelser, members of the committee, my name is Omar Carrillo-Tinajero. I'm with the nonprofit Neighborhood Partnerships that convenes the Oregon Housing Alliance. The Oregon Housing Alliance is a coalition of over 60 organizations across the state. We represent residents, local jurisdictions, and other service providers and organizations working to meet basic needs. We've come together with the belief that housing and housing opportunity is important if we're going to build on our successes, both as individuals, as parents, as students, and as community members. We also applaud the efforts of the work group, and thank you for the discussion and the importance of housing stability. As you know, the economic recovery hasn't reached all the members of our communities. We know that tens of thousands of people are experiencing homelessness right now across our state, including 20,000 children. And we have heard from our partners across the state that they're having historic difficulty with housing placement. The declining capacity of our homeless service providers is especially troubling for us. They're reporting that finding permanent housing options for families is creating bottlenecks and driving up costs in other parts of the system. For example, shelter stays are increasing because of the inability of families to find housing. In some cases, this means more people are transitioning from shelter back to the street, or in other cases, fewer new people are getting into the shelters because the stays are getting longer. We know that people are more successful in treatment programs, staying engaged in schools and other trainings, maintaining employment when they're in stable housing. And the inability to place and maintain people in permanent housing is really truly making all our other human services and our investments in those human services less effective. For example, a study released this month found that mothers who were recently evicted faced higher levels of material hardships, some of the barriers that Ryan mentioned, and were also more likely to suffer from depression, reported worse health outcomes for themselves and their children, and more stress related to parenting than similar parents who were not evicted. The study found that the effects of eviction show up in data years after the event occurred. So it wasn't only months, but years later that the researchers were seeing this. You know, the Housing Alliance believes that this all shows that home is really where hope and growth take root for a lot of our families. They improve health, increase safety, and grow our local economies. I'll end with saying that we're pleased to see the increased attention that the legislature has been paying to finding solutions to these urgent housing needs and support what Housing and Community Services Department is doing with their transition plan to play a larger role in these statewide conversations to meet these needs. And as the Housing Alliance, we're committed to supporting them and continuing to work on solutions. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for this panel? Nope. Seeing none, thank you all very much. And that completes our list. So I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 444. And Cheyenne has some things she would like to say.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I was reminded we've just moved Senate Bill 296 to the floor with as amended with a due pass recommendation. You'll recall and assigned Senator Edwards to carry it, creates a task force. I was remiss because the bill was just prepared and paperwork came out just this afternoon. All task force bills should be recommended to be sent with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. I've prepared a motion to pull it back from the vote to the floor so that it is properly before the committee and can be voted on again in Senator Cruz's absence to add the subsequent referral to Ways and Means. So this is the motion that will back us up properly and then.
All right. So I will reopen a work session on Senate Bill 296.
And my apologies, Madam Chair.
All right. Member. I think that's you.
Oh, Chair Gilson, I move the rules be suspended for the purpose of reconsidering the vote on Senate Bill 296.
Vice Chair Olson moves the rules be suspended for the purpose of reconsidering the vote on Senate Bill 296. The motion is not debatable. Is there any objection to the motion? Seeing none, so ordered. And the rules are suspended. Vice Chair Olson.
Chair Gilson, I move we reconsider the vote by which Senate Bill 296 was sent to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation.
Vice Chair Olson moves to reconsider the vote by which Senate Bill 296 was sent to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation. Is there any discussion?
So
doesn't sound like it.
If we need a two-thirds majority, then we have to have four yeses today right now, right?
Right. So this is your opportunity to cause trouble if you'd like. No. Are you feeling like trouble?
No. We'll get it fixed.
All right. So any further discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection to the motion? If not, the motion carries and the measure is once again before the committee.
Madam Chair, it is in its form with the -3 amendments adopted, and you'll be making the same motion as was previously made, but adding the subsequent referral.
So he'll start
two ways
right here, as amended to the floor.
Correct.
All right.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
So
again,
here,
my apologies
as
for
amended,
the confusion.
And that it go to Ways and Means.
Okay. Chair Gelser, I move Senate Bill 296 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and then be referred to the Ways and Means Committee.
Vice Chair Olson moves Senate Bill 296 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. And this bill is on its way again.
Thank you. Senator Cruz is excused.
And Senator Cruz is excused. And thank you, Cheyenne, for catching that.
Thank you, members, for staying.
And I thought we were going to be here till after 5. It is 4:15.
That's because it's a good day.
It's a good day. There's still one Starburst left. With that, I will adjourn us. We're adjourned. I will adjourn us. We're adjourned.